Hello and welcome to the Phil and Simon Show number 41. My name is Simon Minty.
And my name is Phil Friend.
We have got serious technology.
Oh, it's oozing tech.
We're going up in the world. We'd love to know whether you think this sounds better. And as part of our new improved professionalism, we're starting with Listener's Corner. Two bits of feedback I got.
Right.
Jeff Adams-Binks, who writes to us about 30 seconds after every show goes out, and as our critical and brilliant friend, he said, could you have chapters? So,
well, Jeff, it's coming soon. What do they do at Apple? We announce in March and October.
And I think that's so listener should, I can't imagine there'd ever be a time, but you want to skip one of our subjects, you could. Or you just go to the end of it. You're like, I can't believe they're still prattling on. The other, which is very close to this, so it's clearly a thing, Abby Brown, who's been on our show.
Yep.
I spoke with her, or she spoke with me and said, she's often going along the street, and she'll be listening to us. So she's concentrating on her journey, but she's also listening to us.
Right.
She said, is there any chance we could give the listener a clue when we've stopped talking about one subject and we're moving on to another subject? Because she said sometimes, I presume she's just crossed the road, and she's like, oh my God, what are they talking about now? She doesn't see the change. So as well as our chapters, we might go, well, we're going to talk about this now.
There's two things, isn't there? One, Abby, pay attention. For goodness sake, Abby. Second is that we're going to play around with some music that will divide up. So for Jeff, we're going to do chapters, definitely. And for Abby, we're going to play a little bit of music in between the topics.
And at the top...
In fact, shall we give them a little...
Oh, there we go.
Why don't we just give them a little feel for what that might be like? There you are, you see? It's very nice, isn't it?
It is.
And then we fade it out.
I think what Abby's saying is, could you say we're going to stop talking about A and now we're going to talk about B?
Honestly, that's the clarity. It's not pleasing some people. What about music?
Abby is quite a bright person, so I kind of like to listen to her. I think she's got good. So, Abby and everybody else, our first story this month, you said to me, I don't know exactly what, but you saying, is the quota scheme coming back?
Yes. Is it the year of the... This is actually courtesy of Brendan Roach, another one of our listeners. And I saw on his LinkedIn page or a post he made, he'd been in conversation with another colleague, and I'll post the name on our show notes. For the moment, I've forgotten it. But he had received a newsletter from this guy, an Egyptian research guy, disabled fella. And it was basically giving a summary of what's going on across the world with quota schemes. Now, just for the listeners who are Abby's age, i.e. much younger than me, the quota...
And me.
And you. The quota came in after the war, for the Second World War, as a way of encouraging employers to take on more disabled people. And famously, it became known as the Green Card, and any employer with more than 20 staff had to have 3% of their workforce who was a disabled person and registered with the Green Card.
And that was when we had, remember, when people still say it, registered disabled.
Yes,
which
right.
Which disappeared in the
mid-90s.
Very
old language. We don't, I mean, I know local authorities register people, but we that for employment, that's dead and buried. It went out with the 95 Act. There was a kind of a couple of years grace before it was stopped. Now, the thing about the quota is, in the British context, it never worked. Very, very few employers ever got near 3%.
And wasn't there a lovely line, as it was fading away, I remember they said, and how many prosecutions for organisations that have not met it? And it was something like 1 in 50 or 60 years.
It was even less.
Like zero.
Oh, in 50 years. Yes, that makes sense.
In the whole time.
Yeah. So, the other side of this quota scheme was that as disabled people began to get much more sort of involved in campaigning for rights and so on and so forth, there was also this idea that this was, we didn't want to be treated differently in that way. You know, you're either good enough or you weren't kind of thing.
Does it sort of lead to, which I see creeping back, that's why we blind people would operate lifts and elevators or...
There were prescribed jobs
for...
Yeah.
Or a
lift
telephone
attendant,
directory.
Car park attendant.
Yeah.
And I do believe, I ought to check this, piano tuner. I think that was one good old blind lot. Of course, everybody was going to be a piano tuner.
Masseurs.
I don't think that was included. I think
very
you might find physiotherapists. Physiotherapists, not masseurs.
And my first ever job working in Barclays Bank, the telephone operator, because they would dial into a central number, then the numbers would be plugged. This sounds like I'm really old. I'm
Did you say things like connecting you now?
Winchester 234.
Putting you through.
So they would redirect all of those calls, and then gradually we got our own line, and so that job was redundant. But that was done by a blind person originally.
Right.
Anyway, go
well,
on.
Well, so it was, I mean, of its type, it was a good effort. You know, people thought this is, after the war, it was a good way of trying to encourage disabled people into work and employers to take them. It didn't work. It really didn't work.
Just to qualify, it didn't encourage disabled, it encouraged employers. That was the point of it. It's a quota.
No, the employers were encouraged. Yeah. But you were encouraged to register.
Okay.
So that the employer could then count you against their quota.
Yeah.
Right. So if you had 5 million non-visible disabled people like we do now, they would never have registered because they didn't want, you know, they didn't half the time see themselves as disabled in the first place. So there were lots of reasons why it didn't really work out. And that's why it was disposed of in the 95 Act. Right. It's not been disposed of in other parts of the world.
Germany.
I'm just going to concentrate Germany, France.
South Korea,
Afghanistan. Do you want to keep going? Okay. Uzbekistan. They've all got them.
Yeah,
okay. Uzbekistan has actually. Okay, they're doing quite well.
Been a bit random.
No, it wasn't. So I looked at this article and thought, why it's now being called affirmative action.
Nice.
So we brought the language up to date, but the scheme itself. So I thought, okay, so one of the big questions about the scheme was, is it working? Is it actually meaning that more disabled people are in work?
Yeah.
And the stats, I've pulled out some stats. I'm sort of looking at my screen at the same time, so microphone.
Hold with us, listener.
I'm bear with us. So if you go to France,
oui, oui.
Now in France they have a 6% quota. What was Britain's? It was
4.
No, it wasn't 4.
2.
Kind of bidding war, isn't it? I'm trying to remember what it was. 3%.
Three.
In Britain, it was 3%.
Top and tail,
and 4. You went
that.
On the wrong side of either one. Anyway, in France, the quota is 6%, right? So I'm just going to quote from the research. In terms of effectiveness, in 2017, the AGEFIPH, we'll tell you what that might mean, reported that the employment rate of people with disabilities under the quota in 2015 was 3.8%.
Right.
In the private sector. An increase of 0.2% from 2014. Now, what they do in France, what the employers do in France, is they go, let's contribute fines into the funds.
Yeah.
And that's what goes on in Germany. Susan Scott Parker, our old friend Susan, was always talking about the way employers just got around this by contributing money.
Pay the fine.
Which then, you know, pay the fine, and then that got used for rehabilitation and various other things. What really concerns me is that...
Just to add to that, and part of the problem is you just pay the fine to get rid of the issue, but it also puts disabled people in the slightly, you're a nuisance because I have to pay a fine for you, rather than, you know, I should get you to come and work for me, you'll be productive and I save money. It was always a... Yeah.
And there's been all sorts of scams going on in Japan. One of the things they were doing in Japan was counting people who didn't exist.
Right.
To try and, you know, it's just a mess. Fines the fines that were levied, I think the amount in 2017, the public sector employers contributed €121 million to the fund.
This is in France alone?
No, across Europe.
Okay.
€121 million.
Okay.
So the objective is to get disabled people into work. Doesn't work. What we do is pay the fines, it's easier.
Mm.
Okay. So my question is it effective? No, it isn't. Mm. I couldn't find any evidence where people were exceeding the requirements.
Well, plus 3.8 going up 0.2, these numbers aren't knocking the UK out of the water, are they? You would hope that the quota minimums would be, meaning that us without a quota would be way behind.
Yeah.
€121 million... And then trying to work out, say every person with a disability had €10,000 to assist them into employment.
What would that mean in terms of, I don't know what the figure of disabled people in Europe is, but it's significant, isn't it?
No, but I'm working that out. How many people could you, if you gave disabled people €10,000 and you got 120,
find yourself a job.
And you got 121 million, that pays for your adjustments, or support, whatever it might be, I can't work out the maths, but it must be a variation of something like 12,000 people.
Well,
whatever.
I'll tell you what it tells me. It tells me that it's not working and the enforcement isn't working at all. People are paying fines. So what we should be doing is having €1 million fines for every single person you don't have below the quota, say. Do you think that might make them sit up and take notice?
Okay, but hang on.
We had that problem in Britain because there were so few prosecutions, nobody took any notice of it.
Yeah, but what we've jumped ahead and said that quotas are a good thing. We've missed the fundamental problem with them, haven't we?
I haven't said that. I'm just saying that they're...
You said you love them.
If the idea is that this is a modern affirmative action, let's bring back quotas because that's going to really help. All the evidence suggests is it isn't going to work. It didn't work when we did it. It's not working in most of the places I've looked at. They're paying fines, which help in some ways disabled people get rehabilitation and those kinds of things. But it doesn't lead to jobs.
Clarify for me. There used to be something like positive discrimination that was illegal. I'm talking broadly here.
Mm.
And then there was sort of affirmative action wasn't illegal because that was just a positive thing.
Yeah, the difference is that an advert can't say, this post is reserved for men. That's positive discrimination.
Yeah.
But it could say, we don't have enough men working here. So if you're a man,
said
please
no
apply.
Advert ever. You picked the wrong group there.
Well, I just thought I'd, use that as an example. But the fact is, affirmative action's fine. Positive discrimination isn't. Except in disabled people's cases, of course, it is fine.
And we do know that it can be allowed. But it's weird that a target, it's a legal thing that a fine, but is being used in the language of this is an incentive rather than an absolute.
It's also being sold in some ways as new or freshened up or something.
You mentioned the word quota, so let's unpick it a little bit. I do feel, whether it's been tokenism or talent or whatever it might be, I like it in media and television because I think it's sort of starting to break it and it shows that people still watch and it's okay. But I don't know about employment in a broader sense.
I think one of the things you just said, which does resonate with me, is that you might remember many years ago our mate Chris Davis, who had very, very severe cerebral palsy, speech impairments and so on. And he used to say that you and I were the acceptable faces of disability because we were kind of mobile and whatever. And he was the unacceptable. And he said he was the one that never got a job. And in a sense, the quota was a bit like that. It was, I can remember when I went to Remploy many years ago. So I am talking about Remploy in the days when perhaps we had lots of criticism of it. Many of the people working in there could have easily been in outside employment.
Mm.
But Remploy employed them because they made sense to Remploy. They didn't even employ the most severely disabled people they should have been doing. So there was a kind of game being played here. Oh, have you got a disability? Yeah, I got done. Oh, you're due. Have you got a green card? Go and get registered.
When you said you read this about quotas coming back, did you say about time too?
No, I didn't. Definitely not.
Okay.
I'm opposed to quotas. Yeah. I think we need to build structures where employers are supported and helped because they do need to be in certain circumstances. And disabled people need to get jobs on merit. And
targets.
We need to be in, not targets. Well,
the threat
nothing
of
wrong
violence.
With targets. Threat of violence. There's nothing wrong with targets in the sense that you want to say, we want 10% of our workforce to be disabled people. Nothing wrong with that as a target. It's just kind of, building towards that, and making sure the disabled people get the qualifications they need to do the job and the employer's got the adjustments in place that are necessary and all that kind of stuff, which many of the listeners know all about.
One last bit. I remember working, it was either South Korea or Singapore, and I went to see an investment bank and a very senior manager came in to see me and he said, we need to get our numbers up of disabled people who are employed. And I said, why? I said, great, but why? Mm-hmm. And he said, because this time last year I was paraded on television as one of the large companies that hadn't employed enough disabled people, and I do not want to be shamed like that in front of television.
Right, okay.
What do you think of that?
I quite like that. Should we do a lot more of that?
So, Abby, we're going to stop talking about quotas now, and we're going to move on to a new subject.
We are indeed.
Our new subject is the test of reasonableness. Phil doesn't know this one yet. I was doing some training last week for the BBC, and it was for the people who manage their audiences. So lots of different people rock up.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's lovely.
Front of house.
Exactly. Lovely gig to do. I love them. They're really passionate, cool people. We were chatting away, and you know sometimes something pops up and then that's where you all go off for 20 minutes. Now, I'd said to them, there's 12 of them there. They all look after visitors. I said, a few years ago, I went to see a band called Orchestral Maneuvers in the Dark, OMD, from the 80s. I said I'd paid extra money to get the VIP ticket. What that VIP ticket meant was I got the doors. When the doors opened, I was first in the queue. There is a whole standing area at the front. It was the Camden Roundhouse.
There's I know what's coming.
Big standing area, and then there's seats at the back.
Yeah.
So the moment the doors opened, I had my mobility scooter. I went full throttle across the hall. I remember one of them, slow down! I said, screw you, I'm getting to the front. So I got to the front. So I was against the barriers, you know, the crash barriers. This isn't hundreds of thousands of people.
But it's a big, big crowd.
5,000,
yeah.
5,000.
Yeah,
plus, don't forget, they're all, no one, well, there was a friend of mine, she was 30. She was the youngest by quite some way. Most people were a lot older.
What, 40?
Plus.
Oh.
Yeah. So I parked my scooter widthways, so it was against the crash barrier.
Yeah.
The full length of it. Jumped up onto the seat like I do, and I held onto the crash barrier, and I watched the gig. And I said, it was fabulous. And all of them looked at me, particularly the senior manager of the
BBC. So the modern day front of house staff went, oh my goodness.
Well, I'm only talking 2 or 3 years ago, by the way. I'm not talking 20 years. Yeah. And the senior manager there looked at me at the BBC, at the training, said, I'd like to come and tell you to get down. And I couldn't have let you do that. And I said, why? And he said, well, it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't think it is. I said, I do this 3 times a day when I'm in a supermarket. I'm up and down on that scooter all the time. I know it's stable and secure. I said, I've got my friend next to me. She's there in case I tumble. We are 50-year-olds who are not doing some crazy mosh pit. We're all surging forward. I said, if this was Wembley and there's 100,000 people and they're all surging to the front, I would not be on my scooter. This is respectable older people who are maybe having a gin and tonic. and we're all giving each other space. So I said, I don't think this is a risk. And off we went for 20 minutes trying to rattle this one. What I said to him, I said to all of them, you may be right. You may have to tell me. I said, there's two things you've got to be really careful of. One is I've spent a lot of money. I paid 3 times more than anybody else to get this priority access that you are now going to whip away from me. And also, I am going to be devastated. I am going to be, I was in the front row of the gig. The band could see me. I could see them. I've loved this band for years. And you're now going to throw me right at the back in some rubbish seat and I'm not going to be part of it. And when you deflate me, even if you're right, you've got to be really careful how you do that. So what do you think? Am I allowed to do it?
No.
But you can't just say that. Why not?
Well, taking what they said to you at face value, the Health and Safety at Work Act transcends the Equality Act in that situation, doesn't it? They have a right to protect you, and they have you have a right to protect yourself. Sorry, you have a duty. Let's use the right words. You have a duty to protect yourself. They have a duty to protect you.
Yep.
And they have assessed the situation to be that you're at risk, and they're asking you to move. Now, let's not worry about whether OMD are the best band since sliced bread, and you've been waiting 10 years to see them again. The fact is, that's what they had to do.
Okay, then are you going to give me a refund on my ticket?
Possibly. It might be a way out. What I might try to do is look at what are the alternatives. Is there another place you could go where you could be in that, you know, really privileged position? Perhaps what I could do is line security up all around you.
So I said that.
So
that was one of my solutions.
Did you really?
I said, have my friend one side and two security people the other side.
Brilliant.
In the
were you actually standing on your scooter?
Yeah, of course I was.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, there's no point.
And you do that in the supermarkets too. And nobody's actually said anything to you about it.
Oh, they constantly come up and say, don't do that. And I'm like, I'll get off.
That's the trouble, you see. When in the days people like you were in homes, none of this arose, did it?
I
get his point, and I get your point too. I mean, it's horrendous, but... Okay. You said what's reasonable is he has to obey the law.
Well, the thing I'm slightly worried about, you and him have fallen into, you said, we've done an assessment. No, you haven't.
No, I didn't say that.
You just looked at me for a 33 seconds and thought, oh, that's risky.
Well, in my case, looking at you, I know it's trouble, so I'd have you straight out.
Just for clarity, I stood there for 2.5 hours. Well, I didn't, because I had to keep sitting down. I can't stand for that long. But I was there for 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happened.
That time, on that occasion.
I was as... And Andy McCluskey, the lead singer, quite a few times came over and danced next to me.
Did he?
When they said, we've got to find you another place, I said, I am pretty good on the keyboards. Maybe I could be with the band. They wouldn't let me do that. Okay, so you're saying no.
In terms of, I'm not dealing with all the emotional stuff. I'm simply saying, you're running a training course, right, for people that look after disabled people in audiences.
What do you mean, look after?
Well, look after, make sure they're okay, make sure that they're safe, all that kind of stuff. That's what front of house staff do. No, I'm not old school. This is what front of house staff do. They make sure that people are enjoying themselves. They throw drunks out. Mm. They look after people in case there's a fire and all that kind of stuff. That's what they're there for.
They said, we're going to push you to the side because if there's a fire, you'll be out first. And I went, well, that's wrong. Disabled people go out last. We know that. I said, my scooter is not blocking anywhere. If you put me by the door, I'm going to be blocking everyone.
That's very good.
We're all going to die.
No, you see, they had misunderstood that bit. That's why none of us ever sit near aircraft doors.
Where are you going to put me,
well,
Mr. Jobsworth?
What I mean, need to be thinking about is exactly that. Where can I put you where you're going to be safe, but you still have the enjoyment of the concert? Yeah, very difficult. Very difficult. And you should have thought that before you went. Before you paid for your VIP, you should have done a full assessment of the building you were going to, had a good look round, checked out the auditorium, and then spent your 500 quid on your ticket or whatever it was.
Bear in mind, I paid a lot of money and they're looking after me. Why have I got to do any of this?
Because you are responsible. You have a duty of care to yourself and
other people.
You can't put other people at risk either.
I didn't.
Yes, you did. You could have fallen off your skirt and hurt people. You landing on people would have been very painful.
I pushed back.
I can see that.
It was a glorious debate. Some of my suggestions, get some security, stand around me.
Yes.
They wanted to push me to all sorts of places and I wasn't having it. And then later on, because it kept coming back during the rest of the session, nothing like having 12 people beat you up and you have to verbally come back. Then I said, what if I was the other side of the crash barrier? So I was in that photography trench.
Now you might be able to get and attack the band.
Bearing in mind I'm meant to be vulnerable and soft as anything, now I'm a threat.
Your words.
No, that's what you were saying.
I said you need looking after, that's what I said.
Their eyebrows raised and they went, maybe. So assuming you frisk me, you check me, could I go the other side of the barriers now?
Well, given what you've said about the general ambiance of this thing, so you haven't got 10,000 people jumping up and down and trying to kill each other, i.e. this is a sedate audience, then putting you the other side of the barrier isn't going to put the band at risk. That's fine. And you are away from the element of getting yourself hurt and you're not in the way of anybody else causing them any problems. So that might be a very good solution. What about your support worker? Did they go with you?
So she wasn't a support worker, she's my friend.
No, I'm just saying, supposing.
Oh.
If it was a support worker, would they have gone over the barrier as well?
I presume so.
Well, you see, it's two of you now.
Well, okay, they're standing the other side. I don't care, as long as I'm...
They can't stand the other side. They're your support worker. They need to be with you.
Well, you just asked me. It was difficult. The bit that I said to them is, you may well be right, but how we do this is going to be critical, depending on how I'm going to feel for the rest of the evening and how I'm going to feel when I go away afterwards. I loved what I did, and it was a joy because I could just do it, and it was fabulous.
And the staff there clearly didn't see you as a major risk, otherwise they'd have told you to get off your scooter, wouldn't they?
Andy McCluskey, who's the lead singer, he saw me
afterwards.
You've
now mentioned two or three times, yeah.
And as I was scooting past, he went, hi there, Warwick. And I thought, oh, God. That wasn't the finest moment I've ever had. The manager, I said, have we solved it? And he said, no, but what you've made me think about is, why do I do some of the things that I do?
Yeah.
And I said, I'm really pleased about that. Yeah. Because if the training is you just saying, you're not going to jump to your first instinct all the time, you're going to have a little think about it, And even when you've got to deliver bad news, you are saying, how do we make this the best? And a conversation with me to try and solve that.
It's very difficult, isn't it, to be fair, and taking this more seriously. It's very difficult because he's got to weigh these things up, or she's got to weigh these things up very quickly. Mm. They've got to come to a decision, and then they've got to act on it. And they've got to do that pretty fast.
Yeah.
You are blissfully unaware of what they're doing because you're watching the concert. So the first you know of it is when somebody starts telling you that maybe this isn't going to work. But I think you're right. I mean, I think this is why I've always maintained whenever I meet people like front of house staff, security staff and so on, I've always felt that they have one of the most difficult jobs of anybody. For a start, you know, they're in fact, I used to say to people, what you want is truculent customers, because then you can really show how good you are at dealing with things. And you aren't a truculent customer, but you present a whole set of issues which non-disabled customers don't present.
The moment they came over to me and took me away from my prime spot seeing my favourite band, I would have become truculent.
If they
just said, sorry, you're a risk move, I would have gone ballistic.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But it's also very difficult for them to have a quiet conversation with you when you've got a band going full blast and whatever else is going on.
There were 20 minutes beforehand. Yeah. It was not like... but it was a lovely debate. It was an interesting debate. And it was one of those ones, that the sort of joy of the trainer, you just let it go where it wants to go and...
Yeah, no, I can see... if I'd been in your situation, I don't mean at the concert, but in that room with those people, that would have been a really interesting conversation to have with them.
And the joy is they're such good eggs. They do want to find good solutions.
Well, that's why they're on the course, isn't it?
Shall we stop talking about...
I think, you know, good old OMD.
Are we stopping talking about
the subject?
I think
we probably are now.
All right. It's straight to Listener's Corner. Ruth
Owen. My favourite bit.
You know Ruth Owen?
I do, WizKids.
Yeah, chief exec of WizKids. I bumped into her. She said I'd had a listen. She saw us on LinkedIn. And she sort of raised her eyebrows and went, it's really good.
What? Was she surprised?
Yes, the way she said it. But it was also a really lovely, it was a not qualified, but it was a, no, I really enjoyed it. There's something good going on, which was lovely to hear from her.
Good.
You've already mentioned Brendan Roach. He worked at the Business Disability Forum, and he said he's about to fly somewhere. I can't remember where it was. He lives in Spain, and he said he's going to binge listen.
Binge listen.
To us.
So he's listening to all of us, all of them.
I presume he got two or three shows to catch up on, and that's what he was going to be doing.
So Brendan's slipping. He used to be listening straight away.
You could look at it that way.
I think I will look at it that way, okay. Brendan.
Anyone else?
I had... a note again via LinkedIn, actually, from Sarah Stones, who I think she'd met you. She said she'd met you at BBC Ouch, a rival station, and she enjoyed meeting you and the conversation, but then found out that we did the podcast. So she'd been listening, and she said she thought it was really interesting. And then she asked me to be her friend on LinkedIn. No, you're not friends, are you? You're a contact.
Yeah.
Yes. LinkedIn. That was nice.
Do keep contacting us. We love it. And we've been getting a sort of steady stream of them recently. So if you do want to get hold of us, the email is...
You do this to me every time. I wasn't ready for that. The Phil and Simon Show at gmail.com.
I'm sorry. And you were just about to say your own personal one as
well.
I
was.
And obviously Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn. And LinkedIn seems to be going great guns for us at the moment.
Yeah.
Before we go, you found a video that a chap from...
Sprout something.
Buzz Sprout.
Yeah, they're Which podcast is, gurus.
Yeah, and it's going through a whole load of data on podcasts. And British and American number one consumers. Canadian and Australian are up there. And we're talking generally. We wondered if any of you who listen to us are Canadian and Australian. And we'd love to hear from you if you are. We are pleased to say we're in the... 10th percentile, is that right? Or have I got it the 90th percentile?
I can never work it out. I was hoping you knew.
The essence is 90% of shows get less listens than us. We're in the top 10.
That sounds very, very, very positive.
Percentiles are slightly complex, aren't they, in some ways? But that doesn't mean to say we're getting hundreds of thousands of plays. If you're thinking of making a podcast, you know, it's great fun. You should do it. And what do they say? There's, what was it, 600 million blogs, 1.6 billion pages, web pages, and less than a million podcasts.
So there's room.
There is room.
There's room.
We have been debating this for probably about 20 minutes now. Do we change our name? So if you were, if someone said, oh, there's this great show with these two chaps and they talk about disability, would they come to us or with something else, or how would you find us? So should it be called the Phil and Simon Show, in brackets, Disability Jibber Jabber, Disability Chit Chat, Disability Deep Dive, what, close brackets. What do you think? Something else?
Oh, I can't think of anything better than... I mean, I've always thought Phil and Simon was okay, but what I was going to say was to our listeners is, how did you find us? Where did you go and come across us? Because some of our listeners know us, so that's why they listen. But I'm thinking more about those listeners who came across us.
Yeah.
And how did they do that? Were they looking for something? And if so, what was it? Because it'd be really helpful to know, actually.
You've also reminded me, we have a mailing list. So
we do, and if you'd like to be on that, we'd gladly put you on it.
Well, quite a lot of poor old people get an email from us saying this is the new show. But we've added two people because they've said, I sometimes miss it. Can you tell me when you've got next show? Give us your email. We can put you on that.
Yes.
I don't know about the name. I think it's whether we put a little bit extra in and would that help. So if anyone's got a particular view or even better, a great idea, we'd love that.
Yeah.
One big thing was topical content.
Topical content.
Coronavirus.
And the Duke and Duchess of Sussex.
Yeah.
Should we leave it there? That'll do us, won't it?
They're very topical.
Very, very topical. Have they got the coronavirus or is... Oh, okay.
Let's hope nobody gets it.
No. Well, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, that's hashtag. So, to our lovely listeners and to Abby, who is a lovely listener too, that is it. We're not going to do any more in this show. Thank you so much for listening. We are on Facebook, Twitter and LinkedIn, so you can listen there. And
our email address is thephilandsimonshow@gmail.com.
Is it The Phil and Simon Show or is it just...
Phil and Simon Show. Yeah, Phil and Simon Show is what it is, yeah.
Speak to us.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.